Are you taking him?
I'm not taking him.
No.
No.
Me neither. Welcome to week 8. The CFL Fantasy Podcast is online and ready to go. Where do you need to go? CFLFantasy.tsn.ca to set your lineup today. Most teams a third of the way through their 2018 season, so we are flying along. And don't forget, the season-long winner, when it's all said and done, going to cash in at $10,000. Lots to talk about on this week's show. If you listened to last week, the Week 7 edition of the podcast, you heard Jeff and I yell at each other about Johnny Manziel and whether or not he's worth talking about in fantasy football, the new quarterback of the Montreal Alouettes. We'll try to be a little calmer. I'll try to lower the decibel levels this time around, but Johnny Manziel looks like he's in line to start this week for the Owls. He's a big topic. Daron Carter's a big topic, and a whole lot more. My name is Pat Steinberg, the Monday morning quarterback at CFL.ca, joined alongside Hannah Nordman and Jeff Creever. And guys, we've got a lot to talk about on the program this week. We'll get to all of it in just a second. But before any of that, a little humility, because I was feeling pretty good last week after my 120 points in week 6. In week 7, I was down to about 66 points. Jeff, you won the week, 84.5. Hannah, 77.4. So we've got about a 30-point spread between the three of us when it comes to first and third place in our little internal podcast battle. I guess that's as it should be, guys. We want this to be a pretty close race, and right now we're pretty close, the three of us.
First of all, I just want to revisit that part where you said that we were yelling about Johnny Manziel last week, because I think Hannah can back me on this.
I was yelling.
You were heated.
You went ballistic. I think Pat, I don't know where you are in Ireland right now, but I think Pat was one Guinness over his limit, maybe to be a little bit generous, because wow, that was intense. We're gonna have a lot of great chatter, and I'm sure Johnny Manziel will be another topic. Where are you right now, anyway, Pat?
Dublin, Ireland. Just got into Dublin about 20 minutes ago, so sitting here in the hotel room in Temple Bar. It is kind of like the main central attraction of Dublin. So it's my final few days here, and then back to our neck of the woods. So last time was Galway. This time, Dublin is where this part of the podcast is coming from.
I can't hear the audience behind you, though. There should be like an ambiance there where everybody's behind you and trying to get a live listen to the CFL Fantasy Podcast. You haven't come across any fans out there yet?
I was a little worried that we wouldn't be able to get into the room in time, but we're good. I'm in the room, so this I can go as loud as I want this time around, but I promise I'll try and be calm.
All right. By the way, we'll work on some branded hats and t-shirts and sweaters for us to wear when we're all traveling abroad with some CFL Fantasy Podcast swag. But anyway, enough. Let's move on to week 8. I'm happy. I had the best week out of the three of us, so at least that's something. I know that some people who had Mike Riley had big weeks, and I was sitting there after the Thursday night game going, okay, who had a big game? Mike Riley? Nope, didn't have him. Duke Williams? Didn't have him. Darrell Walker? Thursday night was kind of tough, but throughout the week, I kind of picked up a little bit of ground. I didn't have anybody completely go off, but Pat, I'm about 30 points back from you, and I'm coming for you. I'm coming for you. Give it a week or two, and I'll be back there on top after my disastrous 45-point week, legendary almost 45-point week a week ago.
Hannah, you're only 33 points back, so you're right there.
I am, but I'm the opposite of Jeff this week. After the Thursday game, I was feeling pretty good. I was like, you know what? If my first three players can get me to 50 points, the rest of my guys just need to go the rest of the way through the weekend. And I put a lot of stock in those Saturday games that didn't quite pan out for me. So I kind of fizzled out towards the end. The big points were kind of early on in the week.
Well, if you had Mike Riley in week 7, you were feeling pretty good about yourself. A 5-touchdown performance, 4 of them through the air, and one more for good measure on the ground. 41.2 fantasy points. That is the highest total this season in CFL fantasy football. Jalen Saunders, he broke out in a big way. Touchdown, 29.4 fantasy points for Hamilton. The biggest bargain of the week, no doubt about it. I was so close to putting him in my lineup, and I was kicking myself because I didn't. But hey, that's just like when you're doing a Final Four break. bracket and say, I would have had them, but I did. He didn't put them in. Nick Dembski had himself a hell of a week. His price is trending way up. 28.6 points for the Bombers. A pair of touchdowns as Winnipeg beat the Argos for a second straight week. If you took a gamble on Vernon Adams, it paid off, at least in fantasy football. Just $5,000. Had 19.9 points, the second most of any quarterback, and was, about $9,000 cheaper than Mike Riley. And three of the four most picked players were absolute busts in Week 7. Harris, most picked, most expensive, held to 12.8 points. John White had 2.5 points. Don Jackson, the fourth most picked player, didn't even play, was a late scratch. So if you weren't keeping a close eye on things, perhaps if you were hanging out in Ireland and enjoying your vacation and that game started at 2 a.m. local time and you weren't necessarily as invested as you should be, yeah, you got burned. I'm talking about myself. I had Don Jackson in the lineup, couldn't get him out in time, and that's my own fault. No excuses. That's just bad fantasy football management. But certainly, if you had Jackson in your lineup, you were in line to get burned. So a lot of busts in Week 7 as well. Okay, it is time to start the discussion part of the program, guys. And for at least one of this trio, it's time to put your money where your mouth is. If Johnny Manziel starting this week, and it looks like Johnny Manziel is going to start this week, are you picking him? Last week, we got a little heated. There's no doubt about it. I know my answer. My answer hasn't changed. There's no way that I am thinking about putting Johnny Manziel in my Week 8 lineup. But Creever, you were very, very passionate that absolutely, this guy is absolutely at $7,000, a guy you should look at. It's the Alouettes and the Ticats. You have to decide, are you going to put your money where your mouth is? Is Johnny Manziel in your Week 8 lineup?
Right now he's not, but I'm not going to say don't pick him.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm not going to play your games. You're not going to trick me into taking someone that I wasn't planning on playing just because you say that I have to. That's not how this works. Whose idea was this?
It's a good try, though. We've done it before.
You have, and I'm not falling for it this time. I didn't fall for it with Adarius Bowman. I fell for it with Drew Willey. I'm not falling for it with Johnny Manziel. I might take Johnny Manziel. It's going to be a game-time decision, but I like him. I like the upside. I like what he can do. And we did debate about this last week, and there will be plenty more to come. There are just some other guys that I like as well. But I'm thinking, I like Jeremiah Mazzoli still. I like Bo Levi Mitchell. I like Johnny Manziel. Those are the three quarterbacks I'm really looking at this week. And I know Robbie, he's our social guy with the CFL. You know him on Twitter. He's at CFL in case you're not following him. But he's taking Johnny Manziel this week, and he told me he's pumped to do it, and he's feeling good about his gamble, and he's all over BJ Cunningham as well, who he thinks is going to benefit from that. So, we'll see. I don't know if I'm that adventurous yet, but I do think at $7,000, he's going to give you 15-plus points, and the upside is even higher.
Well, I was looking at pairings, and yeah, BJ Cunningham is who I'd pair him with, but he will not be in my lineup this week. If he was at $5,000, $6,000, I think he'd be a lock in my lineup. But at $7,000, you're just getting way too close to Bo Levi Mitchell's salary. He's just $1,100 more. And up against a BC team that really hasn't quite figured it out yet. So in that regard, I'm going to have to pass on Johnny Football in his first start.
Creever, are you setting these salaries? Because, let's see, Bo Levi Mitchell, most outstanding player, been to the Grey Cup three times, won it once, one of the best, most consistent statistical quarterbacks in this league, 8,100. Johnny Manziel, how is there only 1,100 points between these two guys? I swear, okay. Creever, you are setting Johnny Manziel's fantasy value. I'm sticking to my story. That's the only explanation I have for that.
If I'm setting the values, I should be proud because I'm doing a pretty good job. I mean, Here's the thing. You're speaking a language right now that I don't understand, because Grey Cups, MOPs, any of those things, they have nothing to do with fantasy points. And Bo Levi Mitchell, he's been a very good quarterback. He might be the best quarterback in the CFL. I actually believe that he is the best quarterback in the CFL. But in fantasy, it's a different story. And the Stamps are playing a bit more of a ball control offense. Their defense is so shut down, so dominant, doesn't give up anything. Mm-hmm. Bo hasn't had one of those real dominant games yet. The thing about Bo Levi Mitchell is, and we're getting a little off topic with the Manziel chatter, but the thing about Bo is he's just consistent. He's solid. Every game you know what you're going to get, and you're getting a pretty good price at it. But if you want that quarterback with that boom or bust potential who can go off for a 30 or 40 point game, You're probably not going to get it with Bo Levi Mitchell, as we've seen so far this year. Hey, look, even Vernon Adams last week at $5,000 had 19.9 points, pretty much a 20-point game for Vernon Adams. You wouldn't think after watching that game that that VA is one of the top fantasy producers of the week, but at his salary, he was a better buy than Mike Riley. If you had Vernon Adams in your lineup, that was better than having Mike Riley at 14K. So I think Manziel at 7,000, and this is where my argument lies, and I know I'm going on and on and on here about Johnny Manziel and Bo Levi Mitchell and all the quarterbacks, but if you have Johnny Manziel at 7,000 and he gives you 15 points, that's not going to kill your week. But with Johnny, the potential there is even higher because he's going to be running around trying to make plays, and the odds are the Alouettes, as we've seen, are going to be losing. They're losing most games they play in. That benefits a quarterback most of the time. So I think the risk is extremely low with Johnny Manziel, and the upside is there.
Put him in your lineup then. See if you fall for our tricks again.
Well, I might, because it's too fun not to. It's Johnny Manziel. It's Johnny football, right? It's Johnny football.
Hey,
that's exciting.
I'll say this much. Whether you think that he's going to have a lot of success in this league or not, whether you have bought in a guy who has precisely zero throws in meaningful games in this league, if you're already bought in him or not, doesn't matter. He's a great discussion topic. He has added so much buzz to the 2018 season. So in that respect, I tip my hat to Johnny Manziel, regardless of how he performs on the field. So that is our first discussion topic, and it is going to be a discussion topic, I think, numerous more times throughout the season. The Week 8 CFL Fantasy Podcast is underway. Hannah, Jeff, and Pat, and it's Hannah's time for our Fantasy Flash. Let's see what's going on in Week 8.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
All right, Luke Tasker and Terrence Tolliver are back on the practice field for the Ticats after missing week 7. However, the team could be without Brandon Banks, who was spotted wearing a brace on his knee. This from Drew Edwards of 3 Down Nation. The Alouettes aren't confirming anything as of Tuesday, but it's expected Johnny Manziel will be the team's starting quarterback on Friday in a matchup against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. There's plenty of news out of SASP this week. Jerome Messam has been released following a criminal charge and will not be allowed to play with any CFL team. Zach Caleros is back at practice, but we're unsure whether he'll play in Week 8. Sounds like the Riders intend to hold him out one more game, but keep an eye on things there. Also for the Riders, Daron Carter is back on the offensive side of the ball. He's expected to play receiver when the Riders take on the Eskimos after spending the last several weeks on defense. In Toronto, the Argos are making a quarterback change, switching from James Franklin to McLeod Bethel Thompson. While we keep an eye on Anthony Coombs there, also watch SJ Green, who's reportedly missed time at Argos practice due to a knee injury. Finally, at running back, Jeremiah Johnson, Don Jackson, and Ticats running back Alex Green are all up in the air. You might want to log on to Twitter before starting any of those backs.
Yep.
Yeah, Pat, log on to Twitter.
Yep.
Check on things.
Check your feed.
Don't put up those goose eggs. Nothing kills your lineup like a zero. Nothing kills your lineup like a zero. That's why I play a defense every week, too.
You know what's even worse is when you have a zero and the guy actually played. That's happened to me a couple times, too. At least this time the guy didn't play. But no, you're right. I'll take my lumps on that one. I'm on vacation, but that's no excuse not to get your fantasy lineup with guys playing in it. That is an absolute faux pas. I should have to do some sort of penance. That is awful on my part. I take every piece of ribbing wholeheartedly because I deserve it.
Just remember that the last hour before every game, there can be two scratches. And most of the time, if a player is not going to play, he's not on the depth chart. But just something to keep in your mind and check on, because I think Don Jackson was, what did we say earlier? He's around the fourth most owned player in fantasy last week. So that didn't just burn Pat. It burned a lot of people. So you don't want to see that happen, especially when you're doing your research throughout the week to try to get the best lineup out there. Also, Hannah, did you not take Nick Dembski last week?
I did not.
I'm shocked by that.
I have talked up Nick Dembski.
You have been the Nick Dembski fan club this year.
He's been my money pick twice. This is the first time he just got above that $3,500 mark, and I didn't put him in. and he crushed it.
That reminds
it's like
me.
He knew.
Yeah, that reminds me of me with Brad Sinopoli, because I took him a couple of weeks and he didn't have very good weeks, and then all of a sudden he goes off, and I haven't taken him since. But now his salary is too high, so I'm just like, not too high, but look, he's a great buy. But anyway, I digress. Let's start with the Eskimos. What a dominant showing for them on Thursday Night Football. We talked earlier, none of us had Mike Riley. You two had Duke Williams. I took him out of my lineup thinking I would try and outsmart everyone. Yeah, I look real smart there. Mike Riley puts up a season-high 41.2 points. Duke goes off. As we talked about last week, however, with Andrew Harris, every player sort of has that point, that boiling point, where the cost of his salary is no longer worth the production that he's putting up. And we talked about the difference with big play VA, Vernon Adams, putting up 20 points at just $5,000 versus Mike Riley and what he did at $14,000. And in the end, you would take, knowing the dollar value and what they put up, you would take Vernon Adams anytime in that instance. This makes things a little bit challenging with guys like Mike Riley and now Duke Williams with his salary well over $8,000. And it makes us ask, how expensive is too expensive for these players to put in your lineup?
Not expensive enough yet. I think they're still good buys. Absolutely. Riley's price is the only one in the league above the $2,500 guys that hasn't changed. From week one, it is what it is. You know what you're getting. Last week, there was a great video on Twitter of Riley saying, "If you don't pick me, it's because you're cheap." Is a great sound clip. And then what did he do? He put up 41 points. It's simple. You know what you're getting. He's had 1 week below 20 points. He's been the top scoring quarterback half of the weeks that he's played. He's still absolutely worth $14,000. Duke Williams, I think he's the same thing. He started out this season at $2,900, which is actually hard to believe at this point. He put up 11 points that week. His value hasn't stopped going up, but he's never scored less than 20 points since then. Same deal. You know what you're getting. And if you pair these guys together, it's a crazy powerful 1-2 punch. I was looking at our league after the Thursday game, and three people in our league already had 100 points after that Thursday game. All they had to do was pick Duke, Riley, Stafford, and Gable. 101 points cost them $32,000. Who cares if you only have $8,000 left for the rest of your spots? A running back, a flex position, maybe a defense if you want. But you've made your week right there with four guys.
Yeah, but Hannah, you're talking about an ideal situation where everybody in the same game just goes completely off. That's not going to happen every week.
No, that's not going to happen every week. But I think Riley and Duke's points are pretty much as close as you can get to a guarantee every week. Those guys are putting up a combined, 40 to 60 points every week.
Pat, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's funny because Jeff, it kind of sounds like you're in the same category as you were on our great debate last week when talking about Andrew Harris and how his price, Harris not playing this week, Winnipeg's on the bye, but Harris on a week-to-week basis, the most expensive running back, and his price has gotten to the point where for some, he's too prohibitive to take even with the consistent production he's got. I'm kind of in between. On the Riley front, my opinion has not changed on Riley from week one to week eight. I have never started Mike Riley, and at $14,000, I can guarantee if he stays at that price, I won't start Mike Riley. Not to say that he's not consistent, not to say he's not worthy of going off, but even at 41.7 points, you're still like, okay, well, the points per $1,000 still isn't right at the top. Now, 41.7 points, you'll take that every day of the week, but what I'm saying is $14,000 still too prohibitive for me when it comes to Riley. I'm on a different wavelength on Duke Williams. I see them on different or in different categories because Williams still gives me enough value at, what is it, just over $8,000 right now, $8,300. Duke still gives me the type of value, even though he is the highest or most expensive receiver right now, I'm still comfortable putting him in my lineup. And when it comes to the Eskimos, my opinion from week one was always that you exploit Mike Riley, not by putting him in your lineup at the $5,000 premium on the next quarterback. Instead, you exploit Riley by putting his receivers into the lineup. And that remains the case with Kenny Stafford, with Darrell Walker, and yes, still with Duke Williams. So I'm kind of a yes-no mindset. No on Riley, that hasn't changed. And yes on Duke, even though his... Wait, Hannah, you said he started at $2,900. He's gone up almost $6,000 in 8 weeks. That is crazy, but I'm still a yes on Duke Williams.
Well, that's what five straight weeks of 20-plus point production is going to do. Just for those counting at home, we like to put it in points per $1,000. Vernon Adams last week was a touch shy of 4 points per every $1,000 spent. That was a full point ahead of Mike Riley and also well ahead of Duke Williams. All I'm going to say is this. I have taken Mike Riley once. I took him against the Lions because I like the matchup. And with Riley, if there's an ideal matchup and I don't like any other quarterback matchup, I'll go with it. And it also depends, guys. We had this discussion off air, but it also depends if you're going to find some value picks that are in that $2,500, $3,000 range. Because if you've got a couple that you really like, then maybe that changes your approach and you can afford to go big with Riley. But if you're having trouble finding guys that are cheaper and going with more of those money picks, it's pretty hard to justify getting Riley in your lineup when, even if he goes off for 40-plus points, it might be a challenge to find points elsewhere. So just something to keep in mind. I still do like Duke Williams, even at that price. If he's guaranteed giving you 20-plus points, I'm good with that. Although, Duke had four catches last game. He just had those two big touchdowns. So, hey, he was quiet in the first part of the game, and there was a chance that Duke could have had a quiet outing. So that can happen to any receiver in the CFL. And there's a reason that that record of 100-plus games is only so long. And it's because guys can be contained at any time. So I'm a little back and forth on that. But for Riley, it depends on the matchups. Hannah, what's the next topic?
Well, all I'm going to say is that if you have a $40,000 salary with those two guys in it, you're never going to have a 45-point week. Just going to throw that out.
But you're probably not going to have a 140-point week either, though. I feel like you're tapping your ceiling there. No, but a lot of people are, and you just have to have everything go right. And I don't know. If you're getting those two guys, that's $22,000, if my math is right. It's not very good, but that's $22,000 spent on two players, two out of seven players. I mean, you have to pass on a defense pretty much at that point. Plus, you're making huge sacrifices elsewhere. So I don't know right now. I feel like you can, if you're crafty enough, you can take advantage elsewhere. And it's not every week that Mike Riley and Duke Williams are going to combine for nearly 70 points.
It was a big one. We haven't seen it that high so far. We're not saying it's going to happen again. I'm just saying the bottom line is very high. Speaking of Edmonton, they've got their matchup with the Rough Riders defense. They've given opposing teams some trouble this season. High salaries aside, is this the game where you recommend passing on the Eskimos? I know you guys aren't super high on them, but if you were, is this the kind of matchup that would have you stray from them?
It's funny because, Hannah, you said something last week that I think was bang on when we were talking about. I think we talked about a very similar topic going into the Calgary-Saskatchewan game. And we saw Calgary put up 34 points on the Riders to move to 6-0. And I'm going to echo exactly what you said last week. So this is not an original thought. This is a Hannah original that I'm just stealing. But right now, the Riders are a good fantasy defense in that they will score points for you. They'll pick up sacks. We know that, you know, with Jefferson and Hughes and what that defensive line's able to do, they're able to force turnovers, all of that. You can get points from the Saskatchewan defense, and they're a good potential team to put into that spot. I still think you can score points on them. And I think guys like Riley and Williams and the other players that are going to be in that game against the Riders on Thursday night, I think that you can still get points from those guys. I'm not worried about matchups. This is not the Stampeders. And I know that we might talk about it later, but I don't put anybody in against the Stampeders because you do not score points. You do not get yards on the Stamps. Whereas the Riders score points at their defense, but they also still get points scored on them. And you take a look at last game against the Stampeders. Tavares Daniels had a pretty good game. Mark and Michelle had his one big catch for a touchdown. Romar Morris was a factor in that game. I think, and that was a spread out offense. The Eskimos are a little bit more pinpointed with their key players. I still think that you can put up points against the Riders. I don't shy away from putting opposing players in against them in matchups. It's nowhere near the same conversation as going against the Stampeders.
I agree, and I think Saskatchewan's defense, aside from fantasy value, just on the field, I think their strength is stopping a run game. So if you're going to force things through the air, forcing Riley to throw more is maybe not a great situation. I think it might even help a Mike Riley buy in this case.
I don't know. I'm not fully on board with that. I'm scared of the Riders' defense because I saw what they did to the Stamps last week in a highly efficient Bo Levi Mitchell-led offense. The Riders actually had more yards than the Calgary Stampeders, and it's not because the Riders' offense went off, as we all know, but it's just because both of those defenses were playing very well. And a lot of that, for me, I think it has to do with mentality. The Riders' defense goes into every game, and the Riders go into every game knowing if they're going to win, it is going to be because of their defense. They are not going to put up 40-plus points. They're going to win by controlling the football. That's why we see a lot of runs from the Riders, a lot of screen passes, a lot of the conservative stuff to keep the offense on the field and keep the ball moving. And then it gives them a chance to keep the ball out of the opposing team's hands and also to let their defense get keying on the quarterback and really get teeing off. We're going to see Willie Jefferson. We're going to see Charleston Hughes. We're going to see that defensive line very active in getting after Mike Riley. And I think it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for the Eskimos to put up big numbers, which is what you're looking for if you're spending those salaries. So I'm close to putting the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in that same category as the Calgary Stampeders as an opponent to avoid in fantasy. I'm close to that.
All right, enough of that matchup. Let's shift to Toronto, where the struggling Argos offense has been a regular talking point on the show. Jeff, last week you said this group would get things figured out. They got Mark Trestman. They got his mind. Hasn't happened yet. Now, another quarterback change. I think this is going to be a quick point. I think we might be in agreement here. Is McLeod Bethel Thompson worth a look at $6,000?
This seems like a move of desperation to me, and Pat and Hannah, feel free to weigh in here. I don't know if you agree with that or not. I don't think that this is an upgrade from James Franklin. I think Mark Trestman does want to get a look at both quarterbacks. There's a lot there that I'm worried about, and that's especially in a tough matchup with the Ottawa Red Blacks. I can see a low-scoring game. As far as Argos fantasy contributors, Anthony Coombs, Hannah, you mentioned in the news break, he could be back. Maybe worth a look at 2,500 if he is. He should help that offense. My question is with James Wilder Jr. He's a little under 8,000 now, but he's been very inconsistent. In fact, the very definition of boom or bust. Either he's had a very big week or he's done absolutely nothing. It's funny, Wilder, next to William Powell, they're about the same salary, only about $15 between them. If you had to pick one of those guys, who do you go with here?
For me, on the running back front, I am far more confident in what Ottawa does offensively than Toronto. And Ottawa has not even been the high-powered offense that we're used to being. Like the last 2-3 years, their calling card has been one of the most dynamic offensive teams in the league. But it's actually been defensively where the Red Blacks have done most of their damage this year. They're very high up in terms of the points against. They're a top three team in terms of points against. They're a good team stopping the run. They're a decent team stopping the pass. So this is a team that's been far more predicated defensively than what we've seen from them offensively. And even saying that, I still am more confident in William Powell than I am right now in James Wilder Jr. just because of the inconsistency with this Argos offense. And you know, Jeff, I so much of me, because I enjoy it, because, you know, I'm clearly a bad person, but I enjoy looking at things and trying to make you eat your words and point and laugh at you, but I can't do it. You go back to when James Franklin got his first start after the Ricky Ray injury, and you were so confident in him, and you know what? You made me a bit of a Franklin believer. Even though he's not starting this week, I've seen a lot of things that I like from Franklin. It's just this Argos team is so bad and so inconsistent. I'm with you. I think this is a move of desperation. I would not be taking James Franklin out at this point. I think Franklin is the guy going forward for that team. And if that's the case, he should be the guy still in there. So right now, even on the James Wilder front, for the first time this year, I'm able to say this. I'm not putting any Argos in my lineup until they can tell me, and that includes Wilder, until they can prove to me that they can do anything in a consistent nature offensively. Right now, this team is too dangerous, too risky. I've got no interest putting them in my lineup.
I'll just say, the two running backs in this game, I'm not a big fan of them. I'm staying away from both Wilder and Powell, just to sort of answer my own question. These run defenses are just too good. And Hannah, if you don't mind, that kind of leads us to that next question, because this is where I'm going with it. I got to think that Greg Ellingson and Deontay Spencer are due to sort of come through against that Argos secondary that's struggling a little bit. Just traded TJ Heath, having some new names in there, having a bit of a tough time with a new defensive coordinator in Archer. Argos secondary getting burned through the air. They're good against the run. They've stopped CJ Gable. They've stopped Andrew Harris one out of two games at least. Stopped him in his tracks last week. I got to ask, though, knowing that, what on earth is going on with Greg Ellingson and Deontay Spencer? Pat, you had Ellingson last week. Hannah, we both had Deontay Spencer last week. He hasn't done anything on the offensive side yet. We're putting trust in him. When is there a point where you have to stop saying, okay, these guys are due to break out, and sort of take more of a realistic approach and say, well, maybe the odds aren't good that they're going to do it this week?
Yeah, now's the time. I've been burned. I think I've been burned by both of these guys various weeks, and I'm done with that. Like, this entire Ottawa offense, even, I mean, Brad Sinopoli's a good play. I obviously took him on the week where he got 7.7 points, sandwiched between his two 30-point weeks, because I'm extremely talented at picking busts. I pick all the right guys in all the wrong weeks. I'm really good at it. But Ottawa has burned me several times. I feel like they should be good every week. I psych myself up. I say these guys are going to get me some big points. It's going to be great. And I'm let down. So I'm staying away, even against a Toronto defense that are probably going to give up a lot of points to these guys. I just can't do it. And I'm thinking too personally. I'm thinking with my heart and not my head. But I'm done for now.
I am at the point now where I'm knocking on the door of starting to lose faith in a guy like Greg Ellingson. You know, Deontay Spencer's been, he's always been a boomer bust guy for me, so I haven't touched Spencer at all this year. But Ellingson, especially after his first 2 weeks, you know, he looked like a must start every week because he went 22 and 21 points in his first two games of the year. But since that point, he has gone down every single week from just under 10 to just under 8 to around 6 and then under 6 in his last performance. Like he has not been the consistent performer that you'd want to see from Greg Ellingson. But against this Argos offense, this is kind of my last chance motel, at least for the time being, when it comes to a guy like Ellingson, because I take a look at the matchup. I see Toronto being the second worst team against the pass this season. They're 1-5. You're able to score points on them, and I look at a guy like Trevor Harris. I look at a guy like Greg Ellingson. Sinopoli, the same thing. And I say, you know what? If there's going to be a game, this might be the week. And because I've put so much faith in Ellingson this year, and because I'm such a believer in the type of receiver he is, because I truly believe he is the best receiver in the Canadian Football League when it comes to all of what he is able to bring to the field. Because of that, I'm also thinking with my heart, Hannah, except I'm the other way. I've been so faithful to Ellingson. This is the week that I think Ellingson could bust out. This Ottawa offense could bust out. So Ellingson's in my lineup as we're sitting here right now. My week 8 lineup has Greg Ellingson as my receiver 1. So I'm still confident in him. I still think that he has got an immense amount of talent. And if there's going to be a week, this is it. If it doesn't happen this week, though, I might start coming a little bit more over to your side of the fence.
I'm sounding the alarm on that one. That's a hot take. Greg Ellingson, the best receiver in the CFL. I don't see how you can say that right now.
Have you read the Monday Morning Quarterback, Jeff? You're supposed to run the CFL website. I thought you run through all of my hot takes.
This is a real hot take. I mean, here's the thing with Ellingson. He's obviously earned his reputation as an elite CFL receiver. But he's not putting up the numbers consistently right now. And honestly, Brad Sinopoli has become a bigger option in that offense. When I look around the league and I see Eric Rogers, Darrell Walker, Dakeel Williams, even Brandon Banks, I'm having a hard time seeing Ellingson stand up to those guys right now. The elite receivers and the guy that you're saying is the best in the CFL has to be able to do that on a consistent basis. And in recent years, we've seen Ellingson have monster games, but we haven't quite seen it on a week-to-week basis. So I'm not there right now. I do think that that's a little bit of a hot take.
Yeah, I can't get behind that statement, but you said you're putting him in your lineup. So you stand by it. So I'll give you that.
Let me say, this week, I disagree with you on Deontay Spencer because yeah, we love to call him Boomer Bust because he's a big play guy, but let's be honest, he's putting up numbers because he's a returner. How many receivers that are as dynamic as he is are putting up numbers on special teams? He's basically what Chad Owens used to be back in that 2011, 2012, 2013 area for the Toronto Argonauts, back when a receiver, yes, that doesn't happen very often, a receiver won most outstanding player. So I look at Spencer, and his worst game this year was 8.3 points back in week three. He's had 8.4 since then, 9.3, and then he's had two up towards 15 and 20 points. But if this is a slump, if this is not the norm for Spencer, and I think we all agree that this is a slump, and the floor is 8.3, but we expect him to break out of that slump with a big game at some point because, let's face it, he is far too good not to. He's a guy I have on my radar, especially while the price is dropping, because a player of that talent has not been available at under $7,000 in the past. You have had to pay up big time to get Deontay Spencer in your lineup.
Yeah, there's definitely value.
Well, everything you've just said there about Spencer, though, doesn't that apply to Ellingson, guys? I mean, is he not? Because his value is dropping. He's down to $6,200. He was way up higher when he was good for 20 points a game through his first 2 weeks. And, you know, I just say this because, you know, I want to make sure that if we're qualifying at a hot take, it's been a hot take for a few months. I just went back and through my archives. The April 30th edition of the Monday Morning Quarterback is when Greg Ellingson was named to the money list. So I've felt this for a long time, and I think that he has taken over just in terms, and I know that the last 4 weeks have not been great, but you take a look what he's done the first 2 weeks, what I believe he's capable of doing, and what I think that he's got the potential of doing again. I still believe that he is the top receiver just in terms of all the things that he brings to the table. Not the top necessarily scoring receiver this year, just overall, I believe he's the top receiver in the CFL. So anything that you just said about Deontay Spencer, I think applies to Greg Ellingson. I think there's a potential both guys could have big weeks this week.
Well, Pat, again, I still think the difference is that return ability, because I had Spencer over the weekend and I wasn't panicking because at least he was getting me those 8 points.
Right.
But you talk about writing about Greg Ellingson. You want me in the Monday Morning Quarterback to start adding editor's notes and yelling out, hot take, Creever, hot take, every time you say something that's a little bit controversial or I don't agree with. I could start doing that, I guess.
I could be all right with that.
I want to talk about another guy who I've felt kind of burned by, and maybe unrightfully so, and that's Jeremiah Mazzoli at $9,000. We've kind of put him in the same category as Riley and Bo Levi Mitchell. And while he's put up the big yards, he only has 5 touchdowns in 6 games to go with 6 interceptions. So are you still ranking him up there as like top 3 elite quarterbacks in the league right now? He's had some down weeks, and he kind of seems to be plateauing around the 15 to 17 point mark.
Yeah, I see Jeremiah Mazzoli still as that Mike Riley light, and that's kind of how we viewed him as. You know, that new hip and trendy product that's out there. I kind of liken it to the, I think it's new, but they got the Diet Cherry Pepsi. Love it. It's light. It's got that little twist of cherry flavor, and that's what Jeremiah Mazzoli brings. He just brings that little bit of twist. He's a little bit cheaper than Mike Riley, but the upside is there, and it's still very refreshing, and you love it. And I think Mazzoli, he let me down last week because he was my hot take, and I said, I remember, and I'm going to call myself on it here because no one else has yet. I'm sure Pat is waiting for it, but I'm gonna jump the queue and say, yeah, I promised Jeremiah Mazzoli would get 30 points last week. He didn't. In fact, he almost came through with a huge bust week. He was probably at around 12 points until he led a late touchdown with a couple minutes left in the game down by 2 scores. But he's still putting up massive yards. He's still putting up the production, and the only problem there is he's not finishing drives. Obviously, there becomes a point where you have to say, is he ever going to start finishing drives? And you can't keep banking on that every week, but honestly, I think he is. I don't think it can go on like this. I think there has to be a statistical correction at some point. He's playing far too well to be sitting around with a 5 touchdown, 6 interception ratio. This would put him on pace to finish the season, by the way, if he plays all 18 games with under 18 touchdowns. And for a guy that's throwing for as many yards as he has been, who can run the ball, who can throw the ball, who can do it all, I think that's nuts. At some point, there's going to be that statistical correction. And I want to I want to be the one that has him when that happens. So I'm looking at him every week as an option, and I still like the price. And against the Owls, I think it's a great matchup. So, yeah, I'm still very bullish on Mazzoli. Maybe I'll pay for it, but he's the guy right now that I'm looking at in week 9.
Well, if you're looking for a stack correction week, what better week than playing against Montreal? That's been a week for all guys to pad their stats on any position.
And everything that Jeff just said right there, I agree with wholeheartedly. I am a huge Jeremiah Mazzoli fan. I think that this is a guy that has the potential to be a top-end starting quarterback in this league for a long time. And yet, I'm way more hesitant in putting him in my lineup at this point. The second highest valued quarterback in the league right now at $9,000. He hasn't thrown more than a touchdown over his last three starts. He's had one touchdown combined in his last three starts. He hasn't even been running the ball as much in his last two starts. So I'm, as much as I agree with everything that you said there, Jeff, I'm starting to get into the wait and see category when it comes to Mazzoli, just until we see him start to finish some of these drives off and start to put up some of those big counting totals scoring-wise to go on top of his impressive yards total. So that's where I am on Mazzoli. I've come way more into the wait and see category, and as it stands right now, he would not be in my Week 8 lineup. I need to see him. I'm with you. I think that statistical correction could be coming. I just am not as ballsy as you are to guess and to be able to risk it as to when that correction is going to come.
Well, if you're on that camp, which I don't necessarily blame you for, but if you are, I think you're in the camp that the only quarterbacks you can really start in fantasy right now and feel good about are Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley. I think that's the list. I think that's where it begins and where it ends, because every other quarterback has the same risks.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm struggling this week, because you've got the super high price tag in Riley, and Bo is kind of hanging around the 17-point mark along with Mazzoli. He's getting the touchdowns, but he's not getting the yards. So I really don't know where to go, and that kind of makes me lean towards playing the matchup. And Mazzoli up against Montreal has me thinking, and if we're talking about taking him and matching him possibly with a receiver without Brandon Banks, is it time to stop sleeping on Jalen Saunders?
It's a good question. I mean, he's coming off a breakout game, and the only worry I have about a guy like Saunders is the fact that we're just not seeing a lot of points come from the Tiger Cats. So I think it goes back to the same. And Jeff, I'd be curious as to where you are, because you've kind of been talking about Saunders all year long, and he has his big breakout game. He's almost 30 points against Ottawa last week, highest reception total of the year as well, and he's been pretty consistent in being a double-digit guy over the last 4 or 5 weeks. But just knowing how much difficulty Hamilton's had in finishing off scoring drives and being able to punch it into the end zone, as much as not having Banks might elevate Saunders' value in some minds, I wonder if losing a weapon also just hurts the overall Hamilton offense, and an offense that has not been scoring a ton. I'm curious as to where you'd be on that, Jeff.
Yeah, well, Jalen Saunders no longer comes cheap. He's a touch under 6,500 right now. So you're looking at him as an elite receiver now in fantasy, in the same general vicinity as Deontay Spencer, Kamar Jordan, and a little bit cheaper than Brad Sinopoli. So if Banks is out this week, yeah, I think Saunders is probably worth a little bit more than that price tag. It's when the Ticats have a full lineup that I'm having a hard time taking anyone in that lineup. Now, I took Banks for the second straight week last week, and he did fine. He did well. 20 points. Didn't even need to score a touchdown because of the volume. But a big part of that was Tolliver and Tasker were out. So if that lineup is full, I know I've said it before, I sound like a broken record, I'm still having a difficult time taking anyone there outside of the quarterback, the guy getting them all the ball, and that's Jeremiah Mazzoli. So this week, now Tasker and Tolliver are expected back, but if Brandon Banks is out, I kind of have to elevate Jalen Saunders to the top wide receiver in that offense, and I think against Montreal, he's going to do some big damage. So this week, I like him.
This reminds me a lot of that Gable discussion we had a couple weeks ago. When is his big bounce back week coming? When is he going to put up that total? We know that he can. And we all pretty much decided that up against Montreal is really your best shot to do it. So I can't think of, if you think that the week is coming, you got to think that this is the week. We targeted Montreal. We played against them all season long. And it really hasn't let us down yet. We kind of stray from it at times when we overthink. But I don't think it's a bad strategy to go with, even at this point. And we've also talked about targeting the Lions secondary. They're still giving up yards, but they're getting a little bit stingier. They've had better performances against Harris and Nichols. Is it time to stop targeting BC in the way that we've targeted Montreal, or is that still a good play?
I don't know if it's time to entirely stop targeting them, but let's come to this realization. The BC Lions are not the Montreal Alouettes. They are not that fantasy team to be hoping to beat up on. Hey, give Mark Washington credit, and this is a guy that was in the running for that head coaching job in Montreal. He is becoming, in plain sight, one of the best defensive coordinators in the CFL, and he's done a great job with that BC defense that is full of, I guess I would say, journeymen. I mean, you look at Anthony Orange, formerly known as A.J. Jefferson, just a number of guys across that defense. They just did cut Marcel Young. There's a lot of moving pieces there, yet they haven't been a disaster. In fact, they've been very good at times. They contained the Ottawa Redblacks through most of that game. They've contained good opponents this year. The way that Calgary's offense plays, ball possession, long drives, they're not trying to shoot the lights out on you. It's not that I don't like the Stamps. I'm not saying don't pick them. But if you take a team full of Calgary Stampeders, that might hurt you a little bit, because I don't see a Calgary team that's going to roll up 500 yards of offense against the BC Lions. I think they've outperformed what the expectation was going into the year.
I think we already know the answer to this, but I'm just going to throw out the question anyways. Are we at the point where you will not play a player if they're up against the Stampeders? Their defense is ridiculous.
Yeah, there's no point to put anybody in against the Stampeders as it stands right now. We're talking about, I know they were under 10 points per game, and I think they're now up to about like 11.4 points per game is what they're giving up. The number two team against the rush by a country mile, the number one team against the pass. Like, why even bother at this point? Unless you've got such a crazy premonition-like gut feeling that this one player is going to go off in any given week, which I usually don't really recommend you go about setting your fantasy lineup that way. Otherwise, why bother? You're just probably not going to score a lot of points against the Stamps. And on the off chance the Stamps defense has an off week, well, I guess then you can tell everybody how smart you are if you did it, but is it really that smart a play going up against the number one defense with a bullet? They've allowed 5 opposing touchdowns in 6 games. The next best is 12. Like, it's not even close. Why would you even think about it at this point?
This is a pretty short conversation, and that Stamps defense has certainly, Pat, you're right, been a bit of a wasteland for opponents. But let me throw out one name for you this week, and it's Chris Rainey. If there's one guy I'm going to take, it's the guy that's handling offense and special teams. And Rainey's burned the Stamps before, and if the Lions are going to have a chance in this game, they are going to have to get him involved. We don't know what's going on with Jeremiah Johnson. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think if there's someone to take this week, I would look at Chris Rainey.
Are you taking him?
I'm not taking him.
No.
No.
Me neither.
I think we're up to our new segment, The Great Debate, which I will not be hosting this week. That honor goes to Mr. Creever.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, is this because I lost? Is this like a... Am I being relegated here?
Yes, that's your punishment.
Okay. So, Great Debate. Let's engage in the coin flip first of all. Hannah, I'll let you call it in the air.
Tails.
And it's tails. Yeah. Okay, so Hannah gets to go first. Deron Carter. His salary almost makes him a little bit of a bargain buy. He's back on offense after several weeks playing on the defensive side of the ball. The Riders are supposed to be getting Nick Marshall back in the lineup this week. Keeping in mind, there's a good chance that Brandon Bridge will still be the quarterback this week. We've seen what the Riders' offense has done without Carter on offense. Has been a little bit anemic, to say the least. Is Deron Carter a player that you are going to be plugging in and taking advantage of that bargain bin price? Hannah, you go.
All right. Deron Carter at $3,700. seems like a good play, but no. Edmonton defense, they may give up some points, but with Brandon Bridge at the helm, I don't see it happening. It's not an effective take. This guy hasn't been practicing on offense since week one. He's out of the groove. He needs some time to get back into it. Maybe in the future, I'm slotting him back in. The price is good. He's still above the money pick range where he'd have to be if I was looking at taking him this week.
I think you're a little bit under the whistle there. Under
the
bell.
Efficient.
I don't know. I think you lose points for that. That's not efficient. That's leaving time on the table.
All right. All right. Pat, you're up.
No. The Hannah knows the three C's of broadcasting are two of them are clear and concise. So I think Hannah gets points for getting. If you can get your point in under 30 seconds, I think you get points.
Nice. Thanks, Pat.
It's too much sportsmanship there. I don't like it. This is supposed to be mean. It's supposed to be petty. This is not what I envisioned when we created the segment.
You're right. We're head-to-head right now. Pat,
your turn.
We're enemies.
Okay, sorry. Sorry. All right, it's my turn. Okay, start the 30 seconds now. All right, Daron Carter is one of, if not the biggest freak athletes in the Canadian Football League. He is too good a player to not have in your lineup at $3,700 as it stands right now. Brandon Bridge will look to target him and establish him early. And this guy plays with such a chip on his shoulder that he's going to look to make things happen. For me, $3,763, that is almost a must start and a bargain price for Daron Carter.
This is, that one was a little short too. This is a tough one. And I hate to sit on the fence, so I won't. But I gotta go with Pat here, he made some very good points, as did you, Hannah. But I think Daron Carter is at that price, and we talked about it before the show that there just aren't that many bargain bin players under that $4,000 range. So if you're looking to load up elsewhere in your lineup, when I look at the other names that are around him after Daron Carter, you're going up, and players that you have there are Monty Edwards, John White, Terry Williams. $1,000 more, you have Chris Williams. Are any of these other guys players that you want in your lineup? Ricky Collins against Calgary. Martise Jackson. When I'm looking at this tier, Daron Carter is far and away the best receiver of that group. I mean, are you getting anyone? You're getting basically an elite receiver at that price.
I feel like it feels like the John White value pick that we all were banking on last week, and look how that turned out.
I think it's different. I just think... Carter, I mean, John White's a guy that's coming off two surgeries. We don't know what he's going to do. Plus, he's a running back on a team that hasn't necessarily run the ball well. Daron Carter, this is a guy we were talking about as one of the best receivers in the CFL. So, love the debate. I think it's a good one. It was pretty much a 50-50 ball there. But I think Pat had the advantage from the outset going with the big name. And I like the matchup against Edmonton too. But Hannah, you could convince me not to take him as well. I'm actually kind of on the fence with that one right now. It's a tough call. And I'll be really curious to see the pick trends this week and who's picking him now that he's back in the game.
Yeah.
The upside there is there, but it's boom or bust.
The potential's there, but he's not in my lineup this week. That makes it time for the three-minute warning.
Three-minute warning now, or is it? It is the warning.
We've got our money picks. We've got our locks of the week. And like you said, we're having a harder and harder time picking money picks. The value is getting few and far between. So, Jeff, let's start with you. What are you doing this week in the money pick range?
Money pick, I'm going to go a little bit off the board. By the way, last week my money pick was pretty good. Rodney Smith, $2,500 for the Argos. I would pick him again. I strongly consider picking him. The only reason I'm not is because I'm not going to pick the same guy 2 weeks in a row. That's boring. My guy this week is Eugene Lewis. Big playability, Montreal Alouettes. They have quite a few receivers there with Adarius Bowman also coming on board. But I think Lewis is a player that has been waiting for his opportunity. And he is arguably one of the most talented pass catchers among that group. If it's Johnny Manziel time and he's going into the game, I think Eugene Lewis, there's a good chance he emerges as sort of that number two guy because Ernest Jackson just isn't getting it done, and it's hard to trust Adarius Bowman at this point, as I learned a couple of weeks ago the hard way. So I like Eugene Lewis. I'm going out on a limb here and saying that this is a breakout week for him, and he emerges as a regular target in the Alouettes offense.
It's funny. You just mentioned the guy that I'm going with, and we're sticking with the same matchup. But you know what? I look at Ernest Jackson as a really interesting play. He's not going to cost you a whole lot because, as you're absolutely right, Ernest Jackson has not done much at all at wide receiver or receiver for the Alouettes this year. But because he plays in the slot and because this is going to be Johnny Manziel's first professional start in a long time, I wonder if Jackson isn't kind of that safety valve for him out of the slot. We know he's reliable. We know he's a veteran. We know he still has speed. We know that he is a very, very sure-handed catcher. At 27-17, he's not a guy that I would be clamoring to get into my lineup, but if you're looking to fill all your slots and you've only got a little bit left for your flex position, Jackson is interesting just because of the safety valve element there. I wonder if he's not targeted a little bit more than normal with Manziel's first start. He's an interesting play this week in Week 8.
That's bold. I think you're in the same area that I was with Bowman. That's pretty bold.
That's not Bowman bold.
Not quite.
That's pretty bold.
Not Bowman bold.
I think it's Bowman bold.
I'm not calling 30 points a touchdown and 300 yards for Ernest Jackson.
Stop it.
Like
you're slandering me right now. I'm going to take you to court for that. That's criminal.
That is slander.
On a scale of 1 to Bowman, it's at least an 8.
Maybe a 6.
Hannah, who do you got?
Well, I'm going to stray away from the Alouettes picks here, even though that's where, really, if you're looking for value, that's where it's hiding. But I'm going to go over to Saskatchewan and Jordan Williams-Lambert. He's had 5 or more catches in the past 2 weeks. So even if the yards aren't quite there yet, he can put up some points just with the PPR, the reception numbers. Let's move on to our lock of the week. These guys will be in our lineup guaranteed. We're putting our name behind them. So, Pat, who do you have for the lock of the week?
Bo Levi Mitchell, quarterback, Calgary Stampeders at 8,171. I think he is the best value quarterback in week number 8.
Shocker.
You see, as we talked about, they've been a little stingier defensively, but I do think that they're a team that you can still get passing yards on, and I think Calgary has the potential of having a pretty decent game offensively against them. I know that Calgary plays a very methodical ball control game, but it's a ball control game that still puts up yards and still scores points. I think Bo Levi Mitchell is a solid bet to be over 20 points this week, and at 8,171, I think he's a solid bet. Calgary quarterback Bo Levi Mitchell is my lock of the week.
We get it, Pat. You like Bo Levi Mitchell.
I think he's a pretty good player.
He's pretty good, and it's a good matchup. My turn or your turn, Hannah?
Your turn, Jeff.
All right. I'm going a little off the board, and I'm going to try and offer some value with my lock of the week, and it's Trey Mason, running back, Saskatchewan Rough Riders, a team that has not had a lot of success out of the running back position this year. Remember, this is a team that gave Marcus Thigpen 1 carry one game, and it was an 80-yard touchdown run, his only carry of the game. I like Trey Mason. With Jerome Messam out of there, the Riders are not going to put another Canadian back in that rotation. They're going to have to change their ratio, but Mason and Thigpen are splitting the carries there, and at 4,000, I think Mason's got the talent to emerge as that workhorse running back, and I think eventually he's going to do it. We're going to see Thigpen with his speed as more of the change of pace there. Mason's fast and talented, and I think he's got a chance to take this opportunity and run away with it against a Edmonton run defense that I think is a little bit suspect. Look for a big game at a good value from Mason.
I hate to pick the same guy back-to-back weeks, but I feel just as good about him this week as I did last week, and that's Duke Williams. He's still money. His floor seems to be 20 points. He can only go up from there in my mind. So Duke Williams will be in my fantasy lineup.
So Hannah, you are the hot take ombudsman. Was my assertion that Greg Ellingson's the best receiver in the CFL, is that qualifying as a hot take?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. I think that's a very bold statement, clearly worthy of a hot take title.
Have you seen his stats the last few years? How is it a hot take? But I'll accept it.
Is there a point total that you're predicting here? Like, how could we quantify this? What do you think he's putting up this week?
I don't know how to quantify whether or not my hot take is right or wrong.
He's just saying he's the best receiver.
I don't know if he's going to have a good week or not.
Saying.
I just think that all the tools he has makes him the best receiver in the CFL. But
no.
Well, just for sake of some imp- empirical evidence. I'll say he goes over 18 points this week.
That 18's not a best.
Okay, that's not crazy though. That's not crazy. That's not, yeah. That's all you're right, backing off here.
Let's
you're
get bold. Up. If you're we're gonna be bold, then get bold, man.
But there's a difference between the best receiver in the CFL and the best fantasy receiver in the CFL. But if you guys are going to go,
that sounds like a cop out.
Okay, he'll go 25 points this week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So the story changes.
Is that
all
better?
Right.
Is that better?
All right. Yeah. It's a hot take. It's a hot take. We'll revisit it next week. Greg Ellingson, best receiver in the CFL, good for 25 points this week, according to Pat Steinberg. Not me. That is according to Pat. So this time it's Pat on the hot seat. I think the only one in here that hasn't had a hot take yet is Hannah. So
it's true.
Hannah, what's going on? We gotta cook something up pretty soon.
Some hotter takes are on the way, I promise.
Maybe you're just smart because our hot takes don't usually end up making us look very smart ourselves. So maybe Hannah's the smartest of all of us by not having any. Good stuff, guys. Hey, coming up on this week's edition of The Waggle with Davis and James. Pretty cool guest. They've got Travis Lulay, stepping by on the show. So the BC Lions quarterback going to stop by to talk about his comeback. Travis Lulay is on The Waggle this week with Davis Sanchez and James Cebulski. We're talking CFL fantasy football. Don't forget to play CFL Pick'em at pick'em.cfl.ca. You make your picks each week, and you could win some more cash on top of that. The CFL Fantasy Podcast is made up of Hannah Nordman at HL Nordman on Twitter, of Jeff Creever at Jeff Creever, and yours truly, Pat Steinberg at Fan960 Steinberg. And don't forget to keep an eye on CFL.ca all week for your weekly lineup tools. Roto Experts has all of that, rankings, projections, and a whole lot more. Get your lineup set, CFLFantasy.tsn.ca. What's that, Jeff?
Tell us this week if you're starting Johnny Manziel, because that's the thing we're waiting for, Johnny Football. So I think out of the three of us, what did we all agree? None of us are starting him at this moment.
Yeah, I'd say so.
We want to hear from you. Are you starting Johnny Manziel this week?
Yeah, if you are, be loud about it. Tweet us at CFL and make sure that it makes its way to the CFL Fantasy Podcast. We'll see how many people start Johnny Manziel in week 8. CFLFantasy.tsn.ca. Set your lineups. You could win $10,000 if you are the end of the season winner. Get your lineups in and play for week 8. For Jeff, for Hannah, my name is Pat. Thanks for sticking by and hanging around with us. We'll talk to you in week 9. This has been the week 8 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast.